A bunch of slides I've put together on some work I've been doing on home automation, and unfortunately my laptop, for some reason, even though it's a IBM ThinkPad with Ubuntu, I seem to have problems driving the screen, so I had to borrow Kelly's, and for some reason the charts show up here, but all I've got here is a picture of Kelly's cute cat at home. So if I sort of start talking about feline things, you have an understanding of where I'm coming from. Motivation for doing work on home automation was kind of multifold. We decided madly last year to begin a major home renovation. I live in Sydney, and we'd owned this place for about 5 years, and I've been away on assignment for IBM in the US and then in China. And this is completely nuts. I promise you, one piece of advice I'd give you is don't do a home renovation while your wife is pregnant with your third child. This is a recipe for causing yourself a lot of stress. In addition to that, my day job in IBM is looking after our development lab here in Australia, and so that doesn't cause me any stress. That causes me lots of fun, of course. But last year, I have to say, was an incredibly crazy year. Anyway, having considered and started a home renovation and having some interest in Linux and systems and things like home automation, I decided it was a good time to kind of combine all that together and do some work around the house. And you'll see some of the stuff that I've been playing around with. And I've been acquiring what I was in the US and then in China. You just have this habit, probably like most of you guys, of acquiring various interesting little bits and pieces of equipment along the way. The good thing about acquiring a little bit at a time is that no one gets to see the entire bill of the amount of money you spent on this stuff. And when I start adding it up, the other good thing about a renovation is you spend so much money on the renovation, you can actually hide a lot of geeky equipment in the budget as well. So I'd been acquiring a bunch of Linux devices, interested in home automation, and this is fun. So, you know, I'm always interested in doing things fun. And because my day job is not as technical as I'd like it to be, this is kind of my home lab to do things as well. So being a kind of background in sort of systems engineering, I actually did, it sounds kind of nerdy, but I did sit down and actually think about what I wanted to achieve and kind of describe a set of objectives to kind of help guide me along the way. And I had in my mind the entire time that I was sort of building an infrastructure that was going to need to evolve, that needed to have a number of different attributes. I wanted it obviously to be reasonably low cost, it needed to be very robust. It needed to be based around as many open standards as I possibly could, extendable, secure, loosely coupled. I didn't want to have great dependencies in case some part of the system failed, that everything else in the house or whatever I was trying to do would sort of collapse in a giant heap. Obviously very concerned about energy efficiency, and I wanted to put in place an infrastructure to allow me to understand how much energy I might be using in my house and potentially react accordingly. Obviously, I wanted to exploit Linux as much as I possibly could and not have any dependency on Windows. I've had to break that rule in one or two cases I'll describe. Most importance was this, you know, and I'm sure most people are familiar with the, you know, concept of spousal approval factor, which you know, it's somewhat humorous, but actually has turned out to be a really interesting metric as to whether something I've done has any particular utility or not. And it needed to integrate with a sort of a commercial grade security system, because I tend to travel a little bit, and you know, with my wife at home with three children, she obviously wanted to have feel safe in the house. And so we had to think about things like burglar alarms and stuff like that. So that was kind of an overall sort of project of objectives that I established. I then sort of sat down and said, what are the actual functions, the core functions that I'm needing to achieve here? Now, some of these things I'd been doing, so it was a matter of sort of lifting up that stuff and then, you know, putting it into the new house. VoIP telephony was obvious. When I was in China, we didn't have much good TV in Shanghai. I mean, we had lots of TV, but it was all in Chinese, and I don't speak Mandarin, so it wasn't particularly relevant. I had a friend in IBM in Perth who had been a big Myth TV, or been a TiVo guy originally, and then migrated to Myth TV. And we figured out, because there's no upload charges for broadband, that we connected our VPNs together, and I would log into his Myth TV server, I was in Shanghai for 18 months, and I think I had the link running. I was able to get a consistently 100 kilobytes a second transfer from Perth to Shanghai, and that link ran 100% utilized at 100 kilobytes a second for about 17 months that we were there. And it was great because, you know, we were able to record the Wiggles. It didn't really matter that we got to watch it the next day, download four or five you know, gig files or whatever. It absolutely worked beautifully. So I got quite interested in Myth TV and said, well, we've got to have a PBR solution when we get back to Australia. Now, I haven't implemented Myth TV yet. You'll see in a minute there's a space left intentionally blank to fill that in. I was interested in some utility metering. I had a colleague in IBM in Hursley who's been mucking around a lot with this stuff. He's got this 14th century house on the Isle of Wight and is kind of connected it into Second Life so that when you open the door in the house, it opens it in Second Life. When you close the window, and he's been playing a lot with some telemetry messaging stuff, which I'll talk about and show you what I've been doing with it as well. I won't talk about the media streaming stuff. That's kind of fairly simple and straightforward, but obviously wanted to have that running. Interested in lighting and device automation. You know, you don't get a chance to rewire your house that often, so when you do, you probably want to think about what you can do there. And obviously I talked about needing to have a security system. So I came up with sort of an overall architecture. Now, I didn't sit down and draw any diagrams. This is kind of what I just did about half an hour ago to sort of show how all the pieces worked. But, you know, I did have in my mind, you know, different elements of the system and how they needed to connect. What I spent actually a lot of time on, and it's obviously not directly related to Linux, but was some of this underlying infrastructure down here. A lot of thought in terms of wiring, standards for wiring. You know, there's a lot of things out there when you start to delve into this space. And I'll show you a little bit about what I've done in terms of the network and the security side of things. And then some interesting thoughts about the power automation and things like that. And then obviously, you know, different elements to do to manage messaging and VoIP and things like that. Some of these things, as I talk about them, they're pretty much out of the box. You know, you can sit down and implement IPCOP, very secure, work very nicely out of the box, and there wasn't a lot of complexity to it. So I'll probably just sort of describe what I did and how I used it. And if people want to go into more detail, they're more than happy to share, you know, configuration files and scripts and things like that I've mucked around with. So here's the wiring, and I've got a picture in a minute that sort of shows the LAN cupboard. I did kind of freak out the builder and the electrician and all the rest of it when I said I wanted to run some cabling. In fact, the electrician started to run the Cat6 cabling, and I came around on the weekend to the place, and he'd run like six pieces of cable and hadn't labelled any of them. And I thought, this is going to go south very quickly. So I said, look, just leave the roll of Cat6 there and I'll do it. So I spent over a number of weekends, I'd go around as the building progressed and started running it. I ended up running about 900 metres, three rolls of 300 metres throughout the house. And I probably should have run another 300 metres now that I've been in there. And basically what I decided to do was just say Cat6 everywhere. Cat6 for security, to connect all the passive infrared detectors or whatever they might be. You know, obviously Cat6 for any of the IP, you know, the Ethernet network. Bring it all back into a LAN cupboard. We've got a three-level house. The bottom level we kind of excavated into bedrock, so it's nice and cool. And I established a LAN cupboard in there. And you know, most of the work for the few weekends was just pulling tons of cable back there, which I did actually label as you would expect. I learned more about sort of some of the different cabling standards and wiring standards than I thought existed. And there's actually two flavors of wiring or terminating the Cat6 cable, T568A and T568B. And it doesn't matter which one you use. I chose A, even though that's not used in Australia that much, because the security system that I use is developed in the US, and they were recommending T568A in their documentation. I thought, well, I might as well go with that. You could go with either. You can actually mix the cables. It doesn't really matter. I'd been mucking around with IPCOP and had that up and running, and I really liked the concept with IPCOP of having separate physical networks, you know, a blue network for wireless, a green network for my LAN, red for the internet, and orange for DMZ. So I figured while I was in the US at one point, I went to Fry's, which is a fantastic store, and bought a whole bunch of different coloured boots for the cables. So if you look inside my house, if you see a cable that's got green boots on either end of it, then it's designed to be a LAN cable. I mean, it's just a cable, but just by convention I've adopted a colour scheme to match the IPCOP colour scheme here, and I went for yellow for these security cables. So if you look at a cable that comes in here, it's terminated in this rack, which is at the top of the cupboard. It could carry anything, of course. when it's a security cable, it comes in and it's typically a four wire cable. So I then end up buying a roll of cable for the security system down here and making up cables that just patch into the appropriate point here. And you end up coming up with your own sort of conventions to map ground and power and different things that the security system requires you to do. I didn't run Cat6 down into the security system here because the Cat6 cables tend to be a little hard to sort of bend and muck around with. And it did cause me a little bit of grief in manufacturing these, but you're kind of handy at doing this stuff at the end of the day. And I've terminated more cables than I ever want to in my life. Also in the rack there is a, I think you'll see in the next picture, a gigabit switch up the top there. So this is kind of the LAN cupboard. It looks kind of dull and boring, but they should look dull and boring, I think. It looks reasonably neat because I spent hours running cables and I went through massive packets of cable ties and things like that. It's kind of the fun. This is blokey sort of stuff, if you know what I mean. Without being sexist in any way. So at the top you've got the cables coming in and being terminated. You've got a gigabit switch. That box in the middle there is a security system from a company called Elk, sold here in Australia by a company called Ness, which actually manufactures some of the part things. They've got a whole bunch of surface mount and design work they do in Sydney. And when I went to buy it, the guy that packaged it up, he said, oh, I'll show you around the plant. It was really quite impressive. A whole bunch of surface mount technology, a whole bunch of people building stuff. I was like quite amazed. I have a little X10 controller in here. I'll talk about that in a minute. I acquired a ReadyNAS file server from called Infrant that recently got taken over by Netgear. And they have this really nice little RAID storage subsystem. When I was in the US, I was working in IBM storage development area on disk storage subsystem. And I came across this thing, and I just thought it was absolutely gorgeous because it was way better than our products. But much more intuitive. You'd take this thing home and it would connect back in, obviously upgrade its microcode and or its firmware and things like that. But at one point, you register the storage subsystem via its MAC address when you go to register with the company. And I was in Shanghai at that point, and I get an email saying, we've discovered a fault with the, or a potential problem with the fan speed on this, and there's a hardware modification required. Please provide us your address. And about 2 weeks later, a package arrived in China with a hardware mod that I needed to put into the machine. So I'm a big fan of this thing, incredibly reliable. I wasn't planning to sort of, it's not part of the talk, but it does run Linux, and there's a very active community of people that get in there. You can get in and muck around with the internals. The other big fan devices I have that I like playing around with are these slugs over here. I think not quite know where I got started on those. In fact, I think I bought one to be a NAS head from Linksys, and discovered just by mucking around that there was an active Linux community working on them, and Debian runs on it. It's just an ARM microprocessor with 32 meg of memory. And they make really good little controllers to connect lots of things together, and you'll see how I've used some of those later on. And then you've got things like IPCOP runs on an IBM laptop there. It's a good thing about working for IBM, being in charge of a development lab. I can get my hands on some bits and pieces from time to time. And some VoIP gateway, and I'll talk a bit about there. And this space is left intentionally blank for the future NIST TV server. So that's the kind of physical side of it. So going through some of these sort of elements in a little bit more detail, the IP network was pretty standard and straightforward. I've been building and designing, implementing IP stuff for ever and ever and ever. I played around with a number of different solutions. Originally I had just off the shelf firewall. But I really, as I said before, I really liked the idea of being able to separate out these different networks. So I redeployed a D-Link router that I had as a wireless gateway. I now have, my wireless traffic is completely separate, so anybody could hack into my network in theory, at least provide some level of separation of that from physical LAN. Got a green LAN out here. I haven't implemented anything in the orange demilitarized zone, and obviously connected into the internet. And one of the things I like about IPCOP, first of all, it's very, very stable, very easy to install, pretty much works out of the box. It has all the functions, DNS, DHCP server, NTP, and all that sort of stuff. And then there's a fairly active community of people that have contributed and built various add-ons over time. So I've got an OpenVPN client, OpenVPN server there. and they've got someone's built some crop filter, which is a range, just a sort of an integration of a number of different spam and email filtering stuff that also runs on the ThinkPad there. So that works very, very, very nicely. It also has some nice traffic tools just to look at what's going in and out of various networks. And these things turn out to be, I mean, they turn out to be quite useful when you, and I was talking to Chris Yao earlier, and he was saying that, you know, gone away for 3 weeks on holiday and found out that one of his machines had been, you know, very active on the network downloading stuff. And given that we pay for download bandwidth in Australia, kind of knowing what's going on in your network and how much traffic's coming in and out has proven to be very useful. In the future, I want to do some work in terms of integrating that with some of the messaging work, and I'll talk about those sort of potential ideas later on. So the TCP/IP network is pretty simple and straightforward. Security side of it was kind of fun. I looked at a number of different approaches and different security systems that were out there, and I was looking for something that was, you know, kind of commercial grade. I didn't find anything that was built around Linux. I mean, I did consider for a little time that I could do something. I went to that talk on yesterday. David from Adelaide talking about some of the hardware work they were doing on an open on Asterisk and the hardware side of that. And I was kind of wondering, you know, it would be an interesting direction to go off and look at building a, you know, robust real-time Linux security system. But there's lots of things that security systems do that you kind of need to have working out of the box, not least of driving all of the, you know, all the connectivity out to all the different devices that are out there. One of the reasons I chose this particular system was it's reasonably well priced, in fact surprisingly well priced. It's modular, so you can see the central controllers, this thing here, expansion here just to provide more inputs for different detectors that are out there. This is a kind of hub that allows you to connect the different expansion ports. There's a lead acid battery here. This is an RS-232 interface, and up on the top right there, you can't see it very well, is an Ethernet card as well. One of the reasons that this particular system appealed was that the company publishes the protocol for connecting and interfacing to the system either via RS-232 and or TCP/IP. And my sort of rule of thumb is, you know, if I'm going to buy something these days, it's got to have an Ethernet or an RS-232, and it's got to publish the interface. And this kind of forms, you know, as an essential building block for any, in my, for any sort of integration that you might want to do. So you can sort of see there 20 or so infrared detectors, 5 temperature sensors, 3 smoke alarms, front tamper switches, plus the unit, all of that stuff was around, I think, $1,500, or probably close to $2,000. And that's siren, and it's all, I'm going through a little bit of arguments at the moment, not with the company, but the, because I installed this and I'm not a registered electrician, in order to get a certificate of occupancy for our house, you have to have smoke detectors in them and they have to be certified by an electrician. And unfortunately, the electrician that was on the job he probably could have done that. He doesn't really understand this stuff, so he was saying, oh, no, they need to be wired into 240 volts. And I've got the Australian, which adequately describes what you need to do, and this is absolutely compliant. So now I've got to go and find another electrician who's familiar with this particular technology, and he's coming on Monday to write me a letter. It's not technical in any way, shape, or form. You know, the 3 smoke alarms here are wired in. If the power goes out, the 240, the lead acid battery keeps driving everything. And when I tested it, you know, something underneath the smoke detector. Right, well, there's a strange standard 3786, AS3786, and you've basically got to have either hardwired into 240 volts, battery-run smoke detectors that can run for where the battery life exceeds or meter exceeds the life of the detector, or you're allowed to have smoke detectors that are connected into a security system that's 240 volt powered with the battery back supply, which is what I have. Unfortunately, I can't convince the electrician that that's what I have. Actually, I should have mentioned that too. I'll talk about electrician experiences as well. Another nice thing about this is it talks a number of different protocols, so it's very easy to connect in and do the home order, the lighting control via X10. It has a nice little rules engine in it, and I'll show you some of the rules later on that you can use to make various events happen. I'm using that, but I'm extending it, and I'll describe that. As I said, it was reasonably affordable. And there's a bazillion different detectors. They've got radio RF interfaces to it. There's lots of different things that this particular system has, and I'm sure most of the other burglar systems out there do, but this one turned out to be a good one for my application. VoIP was pretty simple and straightforward. In fact, I built this before while renovation, and was using it, so it's just a matter of picking it up and redeploying it. I run the asterisk on a slug, works absolutely beautifully. I've got a Linksys analog telephone adapter that connects to my PSTN line, and there was a fair amount of, and some SNOM VoIP handsets. I found it fairly complex to set up. There's a fairly gruesome sort of set of configuration files, but once you sort of understand basic concepts of what's going on, it was reasonably simple and to get working. And it turns out to be pretty bomb-proof. I've had fun doing some interesting extensions with it. One day my wife asked me, I want to know what the weather was going to be tomorrow. And you'd normally go over and log on to the Bureau of Met site and whatever. And I thought to myself, the Bureau put all of their weather forecasts in text on a FTP site. So I just have a little job that runs, a little cron job that runs on the slug that goes off and gets the forecast from Bureau of Met, every half an hour, converts it using flight, I found, to convert from text to speech, and then I have to convert it to an 8 kilohertz wave format. So if you dial 95 on my extension, it just starts reading the weather out for you, and then it gets to Parramatta. It describes the temperature in Parramatta and all the different parts of Sydney. But from a spousal approval factor, something simple like that turned out to be an incredibly useful thing. My wife uses it all the time. She's not so keen on the doorbell, because when you press the doorbell, it says visitor at front door. I convinced her that I couldn't make it go ding dong. So we then got to the interesting problem of connecting the kind of world of computing into the world of controlling various devices. And there are lots of high-end systems out there, and CBUS, Clipful CBUS system is obviously one that's that most, if you're talking to electricians about this and they understand home automation, they tend to go down that particular path. And I had a look at it, and I mean, certainly it's incredibly functional and it's got interfaces to do sort of external control, but it is absolutely incredibly expensive as well. And so I decided, in the spirit of being open and supporting open standards, that I'd go down an X10 path. And interesting, as I sort of looked into it, X10 this protocol was invented by a company in Scotland in 1975. So this has been around a long, long time. And there are a multitude of devices out there, a lot of software for it, both in the Unix and Linux environment and elsewhere. So I said to the electrician, okay, we need to have all of the lighting circuits. We need to have everything come back to the single point where the junction box would be, so that I could control everything from a number of different modules. And if you look here, I should have brought one with me. They're kind of cute little things. They're DIN rail mounted controllers that you connect the switch into, you connect into the light circuit, and these particular ones use a momentary action switch. So when you push the switch, it turns the lights on. If you push the switch, it turns them off. If you hold it down, it brings it up and sets the dim level appropriately. If you're communicating with one of these things, you set a house code, a 4-bit house code, so you've got 16 values and a 4-bit unit code. Now, given that I've got more devices than 16 in the house, I've used multiple house codes, so I've sort of split my house into zones and said, top level, first floor, ground, lower ground, and then front and back. So I think I'm using 5 different house codes. And you can do things like turn all lights on a particular house code. And so if I want to turn all the lights on in the house, then I just have to execute 5 different X10 commands and watch my power bill go screaming through the roof. And there are a variety of different controllers. So I found this to be, and again, they're not particularly expensive. You buy 20 of them, it's a pretty decent bill. But again, I buried that into the overall renovation project. So that now the other thing I found is when you say to the electrician that you want everything wired back to a central point so you can control it, and then you actually come to connect these up and you find that he hasn't done that, and he said, "Oh, you meant you wanted everything wired back to there," and so we ended up Fortunately, there's another module that you can put in line that's not in rail mounted, and so we're able to kind of crawl in around a few places in the house and install those on light circuits that he hadn't brought back to the right point. The one criticism that people tend to describe around X10 is that it's a reasonably slow. The way it works is it transmits the bits at the zero crossing point of the AC signal. So you actually, in theory, you get like 20 bits a second of speed across the wires. But for as I found out, for the applications of turning lights on and off, this turns out to be pretty adequate. I'm sure C-bus systems are probably faster and have more function, but for my application, this has turned out to be pretty good. Don't have any delays turning the lights on that I notice, and I've played a lot around with this. Also, as I was investigating, there was lots of discussion around lights turning, things just turning on and off randomly and interference and things like that. I think I've been lucky, given that the entire house has been rewired, that we're in a reasonably noiseless environment, and I probably should at some point put filter on the phases. I've actually got two phases coming into the house, to put filters on there so that the external can't, turn off. Because in theory, if you knew where I lived, you could go to the, and you were brave enough to kind of hang on the 240 volts coming into my house, you could turn some lights on and off for me. But I'd probably detect that you were doing that and come out and have a word. But I haven't this. Yeah, right, exactly. Things that you could actually do some damage with. You're not the first person to have pointed that out.
Do you know what those sort of cost?
Oh, they're not very expensive. I just haven't, I'm in negotiations with a few other things with electricians, so I may get him to finish that off. It won't be very difficult. I think a filter is like 70 or 80 bucks or something like that. Yeah. It's not particularly good at it, but what tends to happen is things will retransmit. So you'll find that the controllers will say, it's sort of a best effort basis. So typically what people do is send the signal, send the command a couple of times. So far I haven't had any major disasters. Sorry. Yes. No. Right. Yeah, and you can send that command. I haven't tried that. At the moment, the commands are sending essentially on, off, dim, set dim levels and things like that. I'm also using another nice thing about X10 is, of course, you can buy modules that plug into, a socket there. And as I described later on, we had a damp problem. We have a damp problem because we're built into the sandstone. And there's just an enormous amount of water pours through the sandstone where we live at any time of the day or night. And so we've got to put some subfloor ventilation in. So I mean, it's just brilliant. The guy, we just went in under the floor, put a an inline, power socket in. I plugged in one of these things, set the house code and the unit code. And then from the security system, I just put a rule in that says, turn if timing's whatever, turn on unit code and the fan comes on under the floor. In the future, I want to put a humidity sensor under there, measure humidity and things like that. But I mean, that's one of the things that you kind of go back to the original objectives. When you say I'm going to build an infrastructure, I want it to be extendable and all the rest of it, that kind of leads me to choose something like that. I don't know how I would achieve that with a C-bus system. I possibly could do it. I don't know. One area that I've been mucking around with quite a lot recently is sort of messaging. One of the things I realized as I was doing this was you end up with lots of different elements in your house, and you kind of needed something to kind of integrate those together. Now, fortunately, I had this colleague in our IBM development lab in the UK who's been playing around in this space, and he'd actually he'd been working a lot with oil companies and doing some interesting stuff with telemetry, and they built a little messaging broker called MicroBroker that's based on a publish-subscribe model. So the way this works is you have something called a topic tree, which defines a subject of interest. And I'll show you sort of the topic tree that I've come up with for my house. And you have a concept of a publisher. And a publisher simply creates a message and associates it with a particular topic and sends that message to the broker. And then you have a set of subscribers. You could have one or more subscribers that registered a request particular message is published on a particular topic. So it's a very nice way to kind of connect elements of systems together in a very loosely coupled way, and they don't have to really know about each other. And examples that I'll sort of show you. You can create various topologies. You could have the security subsystem, for example, publishes events. So if a zone becomes not secure, that's an event. I pick that up over the Ethernet, over a socket from a piece of Perl code, and I just publish those events, parse them and publish them into the topic tree. And then I could have any number of subscribers that are interested in a particular event. So a zone comes on in the bathroom, it's dark outside, I want to turn the light on. I mean, it's trivial logic to then send an X10 command and turn that light on in that zone. I did find from experiment that 2 minutes in a bathroom is not enough time to do what needs to be done. And so you sit there waving your arms around to get the lights to come back on. And so you can create some really, really interesting topologies because you can have things that are both publishers and subscribers. And because you can subscribe to many things in the topic tree, you can start to do some really, you can potentially start to do some really interesting automation tasks. And as I said, it nicely decouples the kind of elements apart from each other. I sort of broke my rule a little bit here in that the messaging broker itself, the hub in the middle, is an IBM product. I mean, I think you can buy it for like $20, so it's not particularly expensive. The protocol, though, is open. If you go to mqtt.org, you can download sample code and you can actually see the protocol published there. And it also has some nice quality of service parameters for messages. So if you were, for example, noting that people came in and out of a particular zone and for some reason those messages weren't getting through, you probably wouldn't want an hour later all of the events of somebody walking in and out of a room to come through. You probably just want to hear the last one. So you can set various quality of service attributes to say, just give me the last message, or I absolutely want to deliver everything that's occurred during that period of time. So here's my topic tree. This is sort of a work in progress. So I kind of sat down and you can have great philosophical arguments as to how you want to arrange things. But, you know, I said, right, I've got utilities, I've got electricity, water, gas, and I might want to measure those and do some computations on those. I've got various different devices, sensors, X10 stuff, light, TV, VoIP, and the security subsystem. And I've got a bunch of environmental things that I might want to monitor, temperature, humidity, pressure, wind. And you sort of sit down and say, well, I've got a temperature sensor that's connected to the security subsystem on a particular zone, and is defined by the security system as just a detector of some sort. So a message that is generated to say that that zone's gone from 25 degrees to 26 degrees, the microbroker, a little piece of Perl code that parses that message, publishes that, and says temperature in zone 3 is now 26. And then I could have another subscriber that is subscribed to that particular zone and then publishes that information back as a particular temperature value for that particular level or area. And then I could have something else that's also a subscriber to that particular part of the topic tree that says the temperature in the zone has gone above a particular point, you know, turn the air conditioner on and things like that. So this is, you know, I found this to be a sort of a really nice way to sort of, as I said before, keep some of these components physically separate, but you know, associate them together via this topic tree.
Do you call your house pad?
Sorry?
Do you call your house pad?
I'm getting there. Don't worry. Been seeing my slides. So one of the things you can do that I've been doing is a bunch of device management stuff. Again, when you do a new house and you come back from living overseas for 5 years, you don't have TVs and videos and stuff like that, so you go out and buy all that stuff new. And I happened to, in the apartment we were in China, in Shanghai, they had an LG LCD TV as part of the apartment, and it had an RS-232 interface on the back, so I kind of got interested, of course. And in the back of the manual, they published the protocol for turning it on and off, setting the volume channels, and also finding out what's, you know, that it is on. You can actually poll it and find out if the channel changed and things like that. So when I got back here, you know, most people when they buy a TV would look at, you know, brightness, intensity, picture quality. And I said, no, this has got to have an RS-232 interface. So I got an LG TV and I got a Denon AVR audio video receiver. Do you get a sense for? Yeah, but I don't think they published the. Okay, all right. So,
yeah.
Okay. They're expensive too.
I don't like the company.
Okay. So, okay. So I've done some very simple stuff, like I've got a slug that sits next to the TV and the AVR, connects in via RX232, and polls gets updates from those devices as to what their state is and publishes that. So you can look in the topic tree and see what channel it's on and what you know the TV's on or off. My wife and children are probably not so happy that I could find out what they've been watching during the haven't convinced them that it's
double plus good.
Okay. We have had Big Brother discussions, definitely. So you know, you have a simple Perl script to implement the particular part of the protocol. I don't worry about a lot of the different features of the TV. I'm only interested in I only implement the parts of the protocol that I need, and I publish those status messages out to the broker. I also have the ability, that same piece of code as a subscriber, to elements of that topic tree, so that I can have other things that publish a message, say turn the TV on, and the same piece of Perl code will see that and then execute that particular command. So you can do really interesting things. So for example, you turn your TV on, you tune to an HD channel, and you want the digital audio out of your TV to go into the AVR, and the AVR to be on the right, in the right mode, in order to then send that out over the speakers. And so you can completely automate that very, very trivially once you set that infrastructure up. You just have a single piece of Perl code, TV comes on, it's subscribed to the fact that the TV's come on, it's on an HD channel, so turn the AVR on and set it to the right settings. You can also do some things, you can also get too clever for yourself. I decided in order to save energy that, you know, if the TV's on and nobody's in the room because I've got two passive infrared detectors, that it should turn itself off. Well, you can lie on the couch for 5 minutes and not move, and the TV suddenly goes off. So I need to do a little bit more. Some of the heuristics are kind of interesting when you start playing around with this sort of thing. Sorry?
If you're banning the system on the TV,
that's the turn to stop you. Yeah, exactly. Yes, I have. My kids and my children are 7 weeks old, nearly three and nearly five. So we're at that point where, you know, we can still tell them to turn the TV off and they will. You know, I give it another year or so and I think I have to be implementing more robust control. In the no, I'm not going down that path. You could. But you can see what happens as soon as you start establishing an infrastructure and you decouple with different devices, that doing stuff like that becomes quite feasible, quite interesting, and potentially, right? Exactly. It just gets really scary really, really quickly. Yeah, well, that will happen. I'll go.
With your proximity detection, there are a lot of aspects that function using Bluetooth to say that the computer has to tell us what it gets for the call.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think I keep having that, getting back to the same point of, you know, once you start doing stuff and you can integrate different information from a number of different sources, you know, you can really build some quite creative solutions. They may not necessarily be things you want to do, but you can certainly have the opportunity. So I've also got kind of interested in the utility monitoring. There's a nice little company in the UK called Current Cost that build a current clamp with a little radio transmitter and a nice little unit. I've got a picture of it in a minute. And it turns out, again, my colleague in the UK who's been working with them convinced them to put a serial interface and to pump the information out in XML format. So I have a slug connected to that, which basically parses the power usage and then publishes it out to the topic tree, and then I can do some interesting things as a result. Right. Okay. Here's a graph. Don't worry about that first line in the graph. This is the unit over here. So at that point, I was using 864 watts. When I set this up, and I was creating some graphs the other day. At this point, it was like 9 o'clock at night, and we had a washing machine and a dryer on. And then you can see this particular spike here was the kettle coming on. You know, it's an amazing amount of current is drawn by an electric kettle. And then I think we put the dishwasher on about here. And so you end up coming, you know, you can really draw some, it can really get quite scary. But the really interesting thing is, you know, none of us really know how much energy we're using in a house. So just simply collecting this stuff and being able to see what happens over time can lead to a change of your behavior. My colleague that I've been kind of collaborating on this with from the UK has got an orb. And you can program the orb to change colors, you know, 65,000 colors or whatever. And so he's got that he's got a little piece of code that's a subscriber that says, you know, when the current usage gets above a certain level, changes its color from green to yellow to red. And he said, it's really interesting. It really changes your behavior because just, you know, it's in the kitchen. You can just tell how much energy usage you're using around the house. Well, you know, you've got to have a, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I like the little slugs, because they're like 1 watt. You know, they consume virtually no power. Well, good question. It does actually support multiple phases, and you can put two current clamps on, and you can see a one here. If you get a second current clamp, it'll put that in, put number two up there, but it sums the usage of it. So I've got to either get another, because I've got the two phases, and I got air conditioner and oven on one phase. That was another argument I had with the electrician. As he was kind of coming back to wiring everything together, he was going to put the lights on one phase and the power outlets on another phase, which would have completely screwed up my X10 stuff, because I wouldn't have been able to send commands from one phase to the other without getting a more expensive. That does get a bit expensive if you want to actually allow X10 commands to move from one phase to the other. Solar panels, exactly. No. I'll have to look at the other thing I bought from a company here in Melbourne is this thing called, we put a tank in, as you would expect, and you don't know what the depth of the tank is. I mean, you can look over the side, but it's actually not so easy to, you know, to look inside. And there's all sorts of weird and wonderful mechanical contraptions that people have come up with. But this company in Melbourne sells this thing called AquaGauge, a nice differential pressure sensor with a radio transmitter. So that lives in the tank and transmits to there. And they also, there's an RST-32 interface on the side here. And the guy was very, very helpful. He said it's normally encrypted and it goes into Windows box, but he was very happy to tell me to burn a version of the firmware in that that's doesn't encrypt it and just sends it out as RS-232, the plain text. And the other nice thing about it, I haven't bought this yet, is they've just put out a flow meter that you could put in line in your mains. So, you know, in theory, I'm getting to the point, I have to figure out how to do gas. That's probably an expensive, and that would be the last utility that I...
Yeah, with the slugs, I had one for a while, and found that after a power outage, people come back up again.
Yeah. I had a look the other week at this, and there is now about 10 different hacks that people have got, to some of which are hardware and some of them are good hacks and some of them are not, to get around that problem. It is a particularly annoying feature that, you know, power comes back on and you've actually got to press the button on the front to boot it again. Yes, it could be something like that. So, As I said, the pressure sensor, differential pressure sensor for the water meter display unit, I've sort of talked about that. I mean, you get the kind of concept, you know, basically any device I'm going to put in the house, I've got to get some way to interface to it and publish it and then do something interesting with it at the other end. So some of the automation stuff is, as I talked about, is kind of fun. Here's a rule that you program into the LED system, which is whenever bathroom 2 comes on secure and it's dark outside, you program latitude into the security system and it knows what time of the day the sunrise and sunset is, which is very, very clever. And then turn the bathroom light on for 5 minutes. And as I said before, you know, I found that you actually have to, 2 minutes is not enough, 5 minutes is okay. And the other way I'm doing this is via externalizing it through the messaging broker, where a very simple piece of Perl code subscribes to the relevant topics. You know, I execute some particular logic of whatever I want to do, and then I send the X10 command via something called a CM12, which is the X10 transmitter, to control the device. And I'm using this for more sophisticated stuff. This system has a limit in terms of the number of rules, and when you want to do anything sophisticated, you end up with sort of some convoluted logic in here. But it's actually quite powerful. And I kind of like the idea of having a set of rules that are always going to happen, no matter if my entire IP network and my entire computing system falls over. I've still got a backup, which is a set of rules that are executed by the security system itself. Yep.
The slugs are new device. So
yes.
The slugs are
yep.
What was the reasoning there versus wiring RS-232 back to your LAN cover?
I have the slugs. Yeah. I went to Walmart in the US once and they had a special and I was selling them for like $20 each. So I just went nuts and bought a few, basically. I bought as many as they had in the store. I haven't done anything with GPS. Back in the LAN cupboard, you couldn't see it. There's a giant power board that's got, you know, I spent a reasonable amount of money on one with proper surge protection. So all of the TV antenna and everything else that could get, phone line and all the rest of it come through that particular point. Yeah, because I did worry about that. So here are some of the automation scenarios that I've sort of done to date. I talked about the subfloor fan. That's reasonably simple. I talked about the TV, you know, turning it on and off, integrating with the AVR. Lighting stuff is really trivial, either for controlled by the detectors or timed. You know, we had at Christmas time, kids wanted some Christmas lights, buy some Christmas lights, plug in a little controller into the outside PowerPoint, put a rule in whenever, half an hour before sunset or an hour before sunset, turn Christmas lights on for 2 hours, and it's like 3 minutes work and it's done. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So there's a bunch of stuff that I obviously want to do in the future. One of the things is some voice control. You could imagine, I haven't figured out exactly how I'd approach this or what technology I'd use, but, some voice-activated stuff that takes voice commands and translate those into a published message across the microbroker messaging system. I don't have to touch any of the back-end infrastructure, and then I've potentially got voice control for a whole lot of stuff. This TV is obviously on the agenda. I want to do some weather monitoring, and it's always kind of fun. The one that I'm really interested in, and again, my colleague and I are sort of noodling on this, is the concept of event correlation. If you start looking at, you're measuring electricity, you're measuring water usage, and you've got infrared detectors. Now, if I walk into the kitchen, then I set off some infrared detectors. If you then get a litre of water, a second or two later, a litre of water, it flows, and then seconds later the power goes up by 1,000 watts. It's pretty obvious that I've boiled the kettle, so I don't know why I want to know that, but the idea of being able to correlate some of this stuff together is interesting. Exactly. So, there's a test bed for kind of home for mucking around. This has been fun. So I think that's kind of the end of the talk, and I'm probably